This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to The Kevin Kelly Show, exclusively here on placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. And now, here's your host, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly.
Episodes and counting of the Kevin Kelly Show, and you thought we wouldn't even get past one or two. Well, hello everybody, this is Kevin Kelly, your host, and it is the new year, first new episode of 2016, our 50th episode. Happy belated birthday, first of all, to our probably our number one fan, Jordan Bielski, and also thanks to Brother Kite. Thanks to all of you for listening. The website home, placetobenation.com, so much goodness on there. I know we'll talk about that later on. Special guest this week, a longtime friend of mine in professional wrestling, John Walters, who is entering the next phase of his professional life. He's been very outspoken on a number of things. One thing I know he's very passionate about is drug-free exercise and weight training. So he's got a new project coming out with that and falling in line with our friend DDP and Stevie Richards. This is another great avenue to find out, because a lot of people set up plans in the new year. They want to get a new start. They want to try something new, different, fresh. So we'll hear from John. We'll talk to him later on, and we'll find out what's going on, what this project of his is all about. And we'll try not to let him stir up too much controversy, because he is a certain speed bump to a conversation when he gets rolling. But anyway, he's a pal. We'll have him back on the show probably never. But anyway, at least tonight he'll be here with us on this edition of the Kevin Kelly Show. I want to thank you for joining us again after we had to postpone last week. This week, of course, we had crazy snow here in the Northeast. My producer extraordinaire, Justin Rosero, is here as well. Justin, you got about a third of the snow that we got here in PA. Is that correct?
Yeah, that sounds accurate. And it's funny because I feel like, you know, after what I went through last year, I don't feel bad about anyone getting anything. It's like, whatever, I dealt with it a year ago. So, you know what? Shovel your 3 feet out and shut up about it. How about that?
I can't complain, because we have been I've lived here in Pennsylvania now 5 years. I've lived in Pennsylvania for 11, 12. This is my 12th year. And this is the worst snow we've gotten here. So I can't complain. This area where I live now, they got hit with a couple of wacky storms, 2010, a couple of 3-footers. Mm-hmm. I didn't live here at the time. Now I do. So there you go. But anyway, it's nice to have neighbors with, skid loaders and that can push all the snow out of your driveway. Yay for me. And, it's a big time in professional wrestling. I've been to Japan. I've done a lot so far this year, Justin. Yeah. I've been to Japan. I've come back from Japan. It took me a while to kick out of the jet lag, mm-hmm. but now we're here. We're back. We're ready to go. We're planning on a schedule for 2016. There's been major New Japan news mm-hmm. happening as of late. In fact, one of my new pals, this is pretty cool. I was telling you this off the air. One of my new pals, we got to get him to come on the show. We just have to coordinate schedules. This is Chris Charlton, who wrote the brilliant Lions Pride book. And the problem is that he lives in Japan, and he has a work schedule such that it makes it a little different with our time schedule of when we record and when he would be available. So we just have to coordinate our schedules. But we'd love to have him on to talk about, you know, certainly a very hot political atmosphere right now when it comes to the comings and goings in professional wrestling. But we are entering an age right now that we have not seen in a long, long time. And in my estimation, it's a very exciting time for me to be in the professional wrestling industry, and for fans to watch the professional wrestling industry, because I think a lot of changes are on their way. Yeah. What do you think about all these things that are happening?
Sheryl Crow said it best, right? A change will do you good. And I think we're in for quite a bit here in 2016. And I feel like, you know, we're going to get to the Royal Rumble, but last night, as I'm watching that Rumble match, I'm thinking, you know, I feel like 2015 is behind us. Raw, sure, has been still shaky, but this is our chance, kind of refresh things, and they're doing it. You know, we saw, obviously, AJ Styles debuts, and Sami Zayn comes out, and they push him and Kevin Owens, and I'm like, maybe things are clicking. Maybe they're finally going to do some of the stuff that they need to do to start building some stars and mix things up. And it's funny because you hear some of the rumors from Mania and everyone's getting bitchy about it. They're like, well, there's no star power. How are they going to sell out Jerry's World? How are they going to do this and that? Oh, this is bland. Who wants to see Bray Wyatt against Brock Lesnar? But on the other flip side, everyone talks about how they need to make new stars, how they have to stop relying on the older stars. And so they're kind of in this in-between. And just when you think maybe they may do it, right? Maybe they're going to do it. Maybe they swerved everyone and Dean Ambrose is going to win the Rumble and he's now a made man and he's the world champ and IC champ and, you know, he wins the title and sets it. And then Triple H wins and it's like, all right, I guess they are going to go through with him and Roman Reigns. you kind of thought maybe they were going to do something different. And I can't blame them per se for going the route they did because the story makes sense, right? That's where this whole thing has led. Triple H screwing Reigns and Reigns finally beats him and maybe puts the authority to bed for a while and becomes the man. But the problem is no one cares about Roman Reigns, and it's due to multiple things. It's due to apathy in general. It's due to the way they've handled him, the way they booked him, and some blame goes to him as well for, you know, the way he hasn't maybe improved a lot of the areas he needs improving in. So a lot of different factors have gone into him being so flat and bland, but here we are a couple months out from WrestleMania and all of a sudden we're looking at a Triple H Roman Reigns main event. And does that tickle your fancy to fill a stadium that's supposedly supposed to hold 100,000 people? Now, I don't know if it will do that, and I don't know what else the card will hold. But let me ask you this, Kevin, and this is a time frame, I'm not sure how, you know, into the product you were. You had been fired shortly before this went down, but in late 2004, the seeds started to be sown for Randy Orton to become the man, right? So they booted him out of Evolution. He won the title from Chris Benoit. Triple H beats him back. And the whole plan was to get to Mania, to have Randy Orton defeat Triple H and be the guy coming out. And somewhere along the way, Randy Orton started kind of losing a touch. The crowd didn't like his face turn. He got very bland. It didn't connect. And around the time of right before the Rumble, Batista started to get really super over because it was organic, it was natural, the fans had a connection, and they pulled the trigger. They blew off the Randy Orton title feud at the Rumble, and they had Batista win at the Rumble and go to WrestleMania, and they flipped the plan, and they booted Orton to a different role, but it was one that I think ultimately saved his career because they didn't continue to force him down the throats of the fans as a face. They realized it was a dead end for the moment. They turned him heel. And they had him challenge The Undertaker at Mania. He lost, but it was a really good match. And then he took some time off from an injury, came back, and kind of got his act back together from there. Stayed as a heel for a bit, and then got heated back up. So the reason I tell you this long story, and I'm not sure if you remember any of that, is I think a similar twist with Roman Reigns at this point may help save his career. Because I think, you know, we're in a different position from last year. Last year, I was of the mindset that just pull the trigger on the guy and see what happens. Now, I think enough damage is probably done at this point that if you have him just go to Mania and defeat Triple H and end the show as champion, it's just not going to go the direction they want it to go, and it's not going to go well. My thought is you have Reigns get screwed out of his WrestleMania title match. They refuse to give it to him. He gets pissed off and turns heel and challenges The Undertaker to a match at WrestleMania. So now there's your match there. Reigns is a heel, faces The Undertaker at Mania. It's a fresh opponent for Taker, a believable. You can go either way, however you want to book it. And then you hotshot AJ Styles into the main event against Triple H and give him the title. Because right now, based on the reactions, and I understand it's a very small sample size, and it was in Orlando, the home of TNA, where AJ Styles was the man for so long. But if you monitor over the next couple of weeks and he seems to be connecting with the fans still and is really heating up, what do you have to lose to give this guy the belt and let him carry you maybe through the summer and to see what happens? And maybe you set up a big AJ Styles, John Cena match at SummerSlam. And in the meantime, maybe you give Roman Reigns a breather, let him work as a heel for a while, maybe fuse with Ambrose, and then you see what you got at the end of the year. Like, why rush this guy and completely ruin him when they maybe have a chance to save him? Now, I just talked for a while, so I'm going to pause. I want to get your thoughts on all that.
You really came loaded with your
I've been thinking about that one all day. So
your booker's pencil.
Yeah.
A lot of pages filled. Okay, let's start at the beginning. First of all, we're in a time, as I said, like an unprecedented time, because we sat here a year ago and you told me eyewitness accounts of the misery that the fans in Philadelphia experienced with the Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
Now, over the past year, not only has NXT risen to start to become a force in professional wrestling, but they signed Samoa Joe. and they didn't call him Hawaiian Punch. They didn't call him Ahmed from the Deep. They called him Samoa Joe, a time I never thought I would see again. I thought CM Punk was the last guy because part of the issue with Punk was he wouldn't sign over anything having to do with his name. That's it. That's why we're going to call everybody John Smith from now on. I don't care what their name is. I don't care how much indie buzz they have or what their reputation is or whatever, whatever. They're going to be something that we call them. We're going to own 100%.
Penis McLaughlin from now on.
He's everybody's McLaughlin. So that's why one of the things that has changed over the past 12 months. But it is slow. It is slow. A year ago, if I would have told you AJ Styles, as AJ Styles, would debut at the Royal Rumble, and Kevin Steen, with a slight variation on his name, would be the man to throw him out, and then a returning Sami Zayn, a returning El Generico, unmasked,
right,
would be the one to throw Steen out, now Kevin Owens. People would have thought we were crazy if we would have told them that, but that's what happened last night.
And by the way, shrewd booking to have, I think Owens was on the short list of like maybe two guys that could throw AJ out and be okay. Like, I think it was him and Brock Lesnar were like the only choices to not have like a full riot, because you can't hate Owens no matter what you do, and Brock and Brock. So,
but that, you know, and that's one of those things that Kevin's never shy about being that guy to do the polarizing thing.
Right.
But he's also he never misses an opportunity to get himself over. Mm-hmm. I'll give you two reasons why Roman Reigns is not connecting with the fans. And it's the reason why Kevin Owens connects with the fans. Similar situation last night. Kevin Owens, first match of the night. Great last man standing match. Finish of the match. Backdropped over the corner. Or excuse me, shot over the corner through two tables. 1-2, you know, 10 count. He's over. He comes out like he's been in a war.
Mm-hmm.
He's staggering in the ring. Spirit of 76, they call it. Roman Reigns gets put through a table, splashed, which I thought was a really cool visual. That thing by Rusev, thought that was cool. You know, helped out, stretcher, refusing the stretcher, pushing the doctors away, pushing everybody, the trainers away. He refuses to take the ride, but you can see he's fucked up.
We got a glimpse of old school Vince, by the way, during that beatdown, dancing and juking around and, you know, doing the little point to show Rusev what you had to run. I thought he was kind of channeling a little bit of 98 Vince during that segment.
Yeah, and he was hot footing it at the end after the Triple H win, which I loved and thought of you immediately.
He's been surprisingly fresh the last few, I thought, since he's come back. I mean, I think he's been the highlight, but it might just be like Stephanie burnout, you know, talking. But anyway, I think Vince.
Anyway, so welcome. All right. So what we saw with Kevin Owens, the way he came out when he was announced for his spot in the Rumble. Rusev and company do their damage to Roman Reigns. Reigns gets led away on the stretcher, helped all the way out. Then later on, when the time is right, here he comes, fresh as a daisy, not limp, walking just fine. Mm-hmm. As we say in wrestling, zero to hero. He does not care enough about the fans to portray the role that people want him to portray. That's not good guy or bad guy. That means put over what you had done. Everybody knows what this is. They all know it. But they want to be dramatically worked. They want to be told, shown, this hurts, this aches, I'm sore, this sucks, I'm in a lot of pain, but I'm going to fight through it anyway. People get behind that. And if you don't do that, people see through that in equal proportions. They see you as a phony because you're treating this as phony. That's the reason why Kevin Owens has a better chance of getting over as the babyface that they want Roman Reigns to be than Roman Reigns does. But here's the problem. With everything that you said, they are not changing their minds. No matter what scenario is presented, it doesn't matter. Hey, CM Punk wants to come back. He's had enough with this UFC thing, Vince, but he wants to be in the main event. Sorry, pal. It's Triple H and Roman Reigns. Okay? Now, let's not get too panicky either with AJ Styles.
Oh, no.
Who got a great reaction last night. But if you shoot him to the top, he's going to get knocked off. and I think about my friend Taz. And I listen to the Taz show all the time. I think he does a fantastic job. He debuted at the Royal Rumble. He beat Kurt Angle. And it was the worst thing that could have happened to him.
All right, but let me talk about the divergence in those two things. One is, in 2000, and I mean, obviously you speak with more authority than I am. You were there. But in 2000, to me, when you look at the talent that was present and then the influx that came 2 weeks later, I can get why that happened with Taz. Because,
fair. Okay, that's a fair point.
That group of talent's not walking through the door in 2 weeks. You know what I mean?
But I'm sorry. Taz did not deserve
no, of course not.
What happened to him, regardless of the talent that was already in-house or that was on their way.
Right, but my whole point about shooting AJ Styles to the top is that they are desperate for a star, a face star. And this guy, he's already like the second biggest merchandise guy in the company after last night. They sold out of his shirts immediately. But like, to me, this is one time where maybe you try and capitalize and don't do the stupid, you know, bust this guy down to build him back up bullshit that they always do. Don't have to, you know, waste months in middling shit and then you heat him up. Like,
okay,
to me, this is one guy that he is red hot right now, coming off New Japan, the indie scene. He's a draw. Just try it. Go with it. And if he bombs, he bombs. But you know what? He's old. So might as well try and milk it out of him now while you can.
So we're talking about two different things here. I agree with you on that point. I think obviously what they've done is they've set the stage for a higher profile match for him at WrestleMania. And I could see him easily against Dean Ambrose. I would say Steen only because I think they would go Steen and Sami Zayn.
Right. And yeah, they seem to set up Owens and Styles, but you're right. I think it seems like they want to have Zayn. But my only thought there is what they may do is do Owens Zayn at the NXT that weekend and then do something else for Owens at Mania. Like, they've done that before where he has the match at NXT. It depends what they view Zayn as. Is he an NXT guy or is he fully on the roster now like he should have been before he got hurt?
Right, right. So, because I think Owens and the Intercontinental title are done. I don't see anybody else sliding in with Ambrose. Do you? Other than maybe what?
Jericho.
I was thinking Jericho. That might be the only other name. Now, Jericho versus Dean Ambrose. Again, we're talking WrestleMania here. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the fact that throughout the Silicon Valley, this year they're in Texas.
Yep.
Last year it was Silicon. Did you watch any of that 24, by the way?
I haven't yet. I went to 96 Nitro after the Rumble. I needed a cleansing of the card product after that.
Well, I watched a little bit of it. It was pretty cool. I like 10 minutes, and then I was like, I got to go to bed. But okay, so this year in all over Dallas, all over the Metroplex, all over, it's going to be nothing but Triple H, Roman Reigns, pictures, banners, posters, bus wraps, taxi cabs, everything. These are marketable stars. And people can disagree with me, but I will stand by this assertion. If you didn't know anything about wrestling and you watched the last two guys in that Rumble last night, you saw Dean Ambrose in the left corner, Triple H in the right-hand corner after Roman Reigns got dumped out. The two of them both come to their feet and they walk towards the center. I'm telling you, 100 people out of 100 that don't know anything about wrestling are going to say, that bigger guy on the right, he looks like something. That dude on the left, he looks gross. There is just something that is different about the marketability of a Triple H. We know his baggage. We know his history. We know. But to the casual fan who doesn't know, who buys one event a year and it's WrestleMania, who goes to the one event a year and that's WrestleMania, that's who they're going to pay for.
Right.
Because the second biggest pop of the night after AJ was Triple H.
And I on the surface, this all makes perfect sense. Like, I agree with all of this. Like, I can't even say they went the wrong route. I just think they're not doing themselves or Roman Reigns any favors by what they're doing.
Part of the reason why, let's remember too, and I know this because I was still very connected with the product, even though I wasn't there anymore. There was a large section of the population within the WWE that wanted Randy Orton to win, mm-hmm, because he would be the youngest.
Oh, yeah.
and no longer would that be Brock Lesnar.
Right, but that was his first win. So that's when he beat Benoit, which is fine. But they were going to have him win at Mania. And the same thing happened with Lex Luger in 94, right? I mean, he got screwed at SummerSlam, or he won by countout, and they were going to build and have his big moment at Mania. But we've seen it before. In that alley between SummerSlam and Mania, a lot can happen. And there's been times in the past where they've reacted well and done the right thing and audible. Then
we also don't know, and I don't know exactly, we don't know what was happening behind the scenes with that young man and what decisions he might have been making away from the ring. That could have influenced that decision.
I don't think at the time, I mean, the word at the time was more that, I mean, you could not hide how much over and hotter Batista was, but we don't have to go back that far. We can go back to 2014 with Daniel Bryan, where they forced to, you know, they bailed on the Batista-Randy Orton main event and put Bryan in the mix because they had to. That's just my point, is I feel like we're, not only are they kind of being forced or driven towards, again, switching things, but they also are not doing Roman Reigns any favors. Like, last year, again, I agree, they did the, I don't know if they did the right thing by having him win, but they did the right thing by staying the course because him and Brock Lesnar was a new matchup, and it was a great match. And I think Reigns and Triple H will actually even have a really good match. Like, I have faith. Triple H usually has pretty good Mania matches, and Reigns has proven he can have a good big match. Like, that's fine. He's just not going to connect with the crowd, and that crowd is going to cheer for Triple H over him. I don't care what anyone says.
Exactly. Exactly
right. That's not helping the new face of the company. They're better off just holding off and dialing this guy back down for a while like they did over the summer and just give him a break. And let his big moment does not have to be at Mania. Everyone's big moment doesn't have to come at WrestleMania.
Okay, so then what you do is, in this scenario you had put out there, you sacrifice and you throw AJ Styles to the wolves.
No, because I think AJ would out-pop in that crowd, Triple H. That crowd is like Rumble is like Mania Light. And, you know, I think there'll be enough of the smarter fan that know who AJ Styles is, that appreciate his work, and they can make him a star even to the casual fan over the next 2 months. Have him go on a win streak. Just let him show off his moveset. Put him in with Neville. Put him in with Ambrose. You know, put him with guys that can work and have him win matches. Have him beat Owens at Fastlane, like, and have a, you know, all-out match. Like, AJ Styles is one of the best guys in the world. He's the wrestler of the year for many. He can do it. He can win you over. Let him do it. You know, it doesn't just have to be, oh, this indie guy and only, you know, 60% of the audience knows him. Like, he can easily be pushed between now and Mania to be a believable challenger. But, you know, screw that. Even if you want to say Dean Ambrose, then he could be the Batista to Reigns as Orton at this point, because he's a guy that the crowd is connected with the entire time. And he's sitting there last night and you're looking at it and you're like, shit, like, just do it. I mean, this is the guy the crowd really wants to see.
It's okay, but we're talking about a company that is built around, it's built around the family. You will not win. You will not eventually get over on the family. No one ever does.
Who's going to get over on what, though? Triple H could be in the main event. Have your main event. Just have it be Ambrose instead of Reigns. He's going to lose. You think Triple H is going to win at Mania? He's not winning at Mania. No, in their mind, the only reason they're doing this is because they think he's the only guy that can give Reigns the rub at Mania.
Exactly right. So therefore, they're not changing their mind.
No, I'm not saying Triple H can't give the rub. I'm saying it shouldn't be Reigns.
But it is Reigns, and it's not changing.
Well, it's stupid because they're not doing him any favors, and that's my whole point.
Well, what we should focus on the undercard, because everything else is set in stone. They might have some change of mind anywhere along the way. That's one match that's not going to change. Everything's already at the printers. Justin, I'm telling you, it's not changing.
It changed in 2 years ago.
It's not changing.
It changed 2 years ago. And the same guys were involved. Triple H was involved heavily. And they hated Daniel Bryan.
I know. Who in the world thought it was a good idea to have Kalisto beat Alberto Del Rio?
I'm fine with that. Del Rio has an awesome look. I don't know. Something with Dodi hasn't connected. He doesn't need the U.S. title anyway, or whatever. He doesn't need that anyway. Let Kalisto have it. That's fine. The crowd is into him.
But what
they're trying
is
to make another Mysterio.
He's not.
Well, he could be. He's really good. You don't like him? Better than Sin Cara.
He's fine. He just looks like Junkie Rey Mysterio. They keep trying to fill this void.
I think Rey Mysterio looks like Junkie Rey Mysterio.
Well, they keep trying to find Junkie, as in with a J.
Right.
They keep trying to find
steroid Junkie Rey Mysterio.
No, I mean like garbage. They got him at the garbage store.
Come
They keep trying to find the next Ray. There isn't the next Ray.
I think this guy could be close. He's the closest they've come.
Okay. He's the closest they've come. Sin Cara was a miss.
Well, that's his own doing because they got behind him, but he botched everything left and right.
Oh, yeah. But again, that's what makes him so special.
That he botches everything?
No. That's what makes Ray so special. Is because he's so damn good.
But I think Kalisto is too. And I think they were smart, though, to capitalize. You know, Sin Cara got hurt, shocker. But to capitalize on the big spot at TLC is what got Kalisto kind of heated up. Like, for once, he did the right thing, I thought. I thought he got hot. The crowd got behind him. He had an awesome move, an awesome spot at that show. Everyone was talking about him. Give him a shot. This is what they don't do enough of. They keep going back to the old reliables. That's the problem. They're not taking enough chances, and it keeps putting them in this stupid cycle where they spend all year trying to build other guys, but they keep, you know, dicking around with it, and then by the time they get back to Mania season, they're stuck, and they have to go back to the well again, and eventually that well is going to really dry up. And by the way, they're showing Raw's opening with Stills from the Rumble. How stupid do Reigns look being loaded in that stretcher, like sitting up, like he's getting loaded, like an 80-year-old man getting lowered into a hot tub or something. It's like, I don't understand why they had him sitting up in the stretcher. It was really stupid looking.
Because that's what happens to you.
You sit up in the stretcher?
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Did Jericho have a bloody nose, or was he wearing a Hitler mustache?
I don't know what he's got going on. And I don't know. It's funny to think that, like, he got the old man last a long time run. Because in 1993, they did the same thing with Bob Backlund, but he felt so old. And we've come to the point now where, like, Jericho doesn't feel that old, but I mean, he's probably older than Backlund was, I think, in 93 when he did that thing. And I don't know. It's just weird. Before Raw gets
Jericho's not crazy.
He may be.
No, he's awesome. Backlund's out
awesome.
Of mind.
Backlund is awesome, too.
Maybe we should have Backlund on the show. Awesome. See, here's that shot, right? They just showed the shot of Triple H and Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose. And Ambrose, they got at the garbage store compared to Triple H.
Did you see that picture of Triple H, like, you know how he does the introductory pictures with the NXT, he's wearing the suit and, like, he's all pumped up? Like, it'll show, like, him next to, like, Kevin Owens when he signed him. They have one of him standing next to himself with the belt. I'll send it to you.
It's really funny. That's funny.
So there's a big rumor for Raw tonight. We're taping this right as Raw's starting, but a major star is returning for the road to WrestleMania. Rumors swirling that it could be The Rock, but to me that's not a big surprise because Rock's, you know, they've already kind of said he's going to be around.
Well, he's a major star.
Any chances, you know, is it Daniel Bryan? Did he get cleared? Those are the rumors going around. What is Vince? Vince has an awesome suit, though. The rumors are going around that he got cleared.
Look at him. He's spry. He's fit. He's ready to go. Tan, rested, and ready. McMahon in 2016.
Do it.
If he's Trump's vice president, I'm voting for that ticket.
He looks better now than he did a couple years ago.
I tell you, he looked kind of spotty a couple of years ago. And
well, there were people who thought he was blind or that he was really sick. Remember the whole thing that was going around? Because, like, there was a thing where he walked kind of funny towards, was it Ambrose or someone, to give him a hug, and he had to, like, be directed towards him or something. People thought he started to lose his vision.
Well, he's feeling good now.
All right. So what do you think of talk about Japan real quick and then tie it into those guys jumping. So I
talk
know we got
about
way
Japan
off.
Real quick. Let me tell you about Japan. I'm going to spend an hour on Japan.
All right. Talk about Japan. What do you got
going
on?
Oh, my God. Where do I start? It was so awesome.
I heard the massage was awesome.
No, there is no massage. But it was. All right. This was the second time that I've been there. I was there in October. I went back for Wrestle Kingdom. It is first class treatment all the way through. And the culture in Japan, the people are the nicest people. I didn't go to McDonald's, which is right across the street from the hotel, but people went, one of the guys in my group went to McDonald's. And they said, Kevin, you had to see it. It's like everybody that works at McDonald's gets up there in Japan, gets up every morning. And the first thing that they do is they sit up in bed and they go, thank God I get to go to work at McDonald's today. And they have a smile on their face and they just bend over backwards to make sure that your McDonald's experience is the greatest of all time. I was like, is the food any different? Do they have seaweed on stuff? Is it? No, it's the exact same food that you get at the American McDonald's. The people make the whole difference. And that's the difference between New Japan Pro Wrestling, and any other company I've ever worked for, including Ring of Honor, is the people. Mm-hmm. It is just so amazing how nice they are and how it just makes me appreciate everything so much more. It really does, because of how nice everyone is. I brought some of that back with me. It's like we can all do better. We can all be better people and be nicer. I had the awesome experience of getting to call Wrestle Kingdom. It was a fantastic show from top to bottom. My boy Cheeseburger in the Rumble, the pre-show Rumble, that was incredible. Just to see him in there with all those legends. The first four guys in the Rumble were Jushin Thunder Liger, Fujiwara, who they named the armbar from. He was the first graduate of the New Japan Dojo. Tiger Mask, and then Cheeseburger. Those were the first four guys. Hiro Saito was in it. Koshinaka was in it. Yuji Nagata, Tenzan, Kojima, all the legends, all the stars, they were all in there, and Burger fought nearly to the end. All the way through, great matches, great matches, great matches. The last two matches, the semi-main, AJ versus Nakamura, and it was just fantastic, and you thought after that, well, there's your match of the year. And then Tanahashi and Okada topped it. They topped it in the main event. Okada finally beats Tanahashi in the big spot, winning at the Dome, retaining the title. He's beaten Tanahashi before, but this one meant everything because he hadn't beaten him at the Dome. This was it. Big career-changing moment, and it was fantastic. Then the next night, as is the tradition, sort of the Raw after WrestleMania, if you will, they have New Year's Dash at Corican Hall, and it's the kind of where everything gets started. The next matchups are announced, and you start to see where the big matches are going to be in the early part of 2016. Got to call that one as well. Can't say enough nice things about the New Japan World staff either. They are the nicest folks. I'll give you a quick story. So we're going over kind of the format and the not the format, but basically the flow of the day. We had to rehearse for a certain amount of time, and then we had to appear on this pre-show on the website. And then we had a little bit of downtime, and then we had to be out there at 3:40, I think. And the Rumble started at 4, and the show started at 5. And these are just loose times. But anyway, so we had a little bit of downtime, and I have one job while I'm here, and that's to bring back a book for my 8-year-old son's class. My son's teacher asked if I could bring back a Japanese children's book. So I said, I get to go book shopping. I don't know what to find, but I'm sure it'll be neat, whatever I find. That's all I said. The next day, we're at Corican Hall. And one of the staff of people that I was telling this story to is there. My buddy Yuji Kitano from the website, he says, Naomi is here from yesterday. She would like to speak with you. I was like, okay, very nice. Hi, Naomi. Good to see you again. She went out, Justin, and bought a children's book for me. Not just any children's book, but the most famous series of children's books, or I forget what it exactly was, but sort of like the most popular book for children in Japan. And it's loosely translated, The Cat Who Had a Million Lives. And the fact that she went out of her way and bought this and gave it to me as a gift, like I've never had any experience like that in, you know, 25 years in professional wrestling. Not that people haven't done nice things.
Like the guy who carried a box of Boneheads across snowy Philadelphia just for you?
Second place to that gesture.
Okay, good.
Was this book
that,
for my
that
son's
is a great
class.
Story, though. Did they like the book, the class?
Loved it. Because then we were also able to figure out the translation of it and put this book sort of in its proper context of what this storybook means to children in Japan. And I'm flying back and I've got, you know, a bag full of stuff that I had brought with me, you know, or had bought while I was there, and I'm putting it in the overhead, and the book falls out and lands, you know, in the aisle between the seats. And the woman says, oh, that's my favorite book. And I said, oh yeah, I just got it as I said, I just was given it as a gift and I'm bringing it back from my son's classroom. You know, I said, I got to make sure I put this up here so it doesn't fall out again. So 14-hour flight, we land, and she says, you know, that book, she says, I just read. Now, she was a woman in her 30s. She said, I just read it, in fact, a couple of years ago, just because I remembered it from my childhood. And she said it had the same effect on me then as it did now. I cried. It makes me cry. It's like it really is this powerfully impactful book. So just this gesture meant the world to me. Second, of course, to the Bonehead's Wings gesture that you pulled off, that miraculous feat, walking across cold, blizzardy, dismal South Philadelphia, toting these Bonehead Wings. Mm. A great cost, personal expense, time and aggravation. Second to that was this book gesture in Japan. So I got to call these awesome matches. I had this awesome time. I love the culture. I love the people. I can't wait to go back. I am going back in 2016 because the audience for Wrestle Kingdom and for New Year's Dash, they were thrilled with the growth of the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And the more events that we put on, the more subscribers that we get. Go figure, especially on the English-speaking side. So April, May, June, throughout the summer months, all the big events, basically I'm going to be there calling them live on New Japan World. So I'm really, really, really excited about that. Obviously, we got together the day of New Year's Dash and just put our heads together because, you know, Ring of Honor is involved with New Japan a little bit. And so, hey, there's some changes coming. So we just want to kind of alert you to what's going on because some of these guys were going to be booked for anniversary and probably events down the road. So AJ's leaving. Nakamura's leaving. Gallows and Anderson are leaving. Oh, okay. And so it's, you know, it's turmoil, it's change, it's upheaval, it's, you know, but it's a good thing because it opens doors for other people. And, you know, they have Okada, they have Tanahashi, although Tanahashi got hurt. I heard a little bit at Fantastic Mania. Don't know how hurt his shoulder is. Happened over the weekend or yesterday or this morning. I'm not quite sure when in the space-time continuum that is Japan. But anyway, so I don't know more about that. But again, there's more opportunity. Kenny Omega stepped up huge. Young Bucks stepped up huge. There's going to be other guys that are going to step up. They're going to be given the opportunity to do so. As people leave, people have to fill the void. And the Young Bucks spoke to me. We talked at Corrigan. And they said, Kevin, this is the most exciting time ever we've ever seen in professional wrestling. We are going to no lacking confidence at all. And really excited for where things are headed. And when those guys say it, I believe it. I wasn't always buyers on the Young Bucks. It took me a little while to get it. But now I get it. 125%. I get it with the Young Bucks. And I see it. Because I see it now every time they're in the ring. They're just amazing. And they can do no wrong. Everything that they touch, man, it just turns to gold. So when they say it, I believe it, and I'm really excited for where the future is for Ring of Honor, for New Japan, and for my involvement with both companies. I'm in a great spot. I can't ask for a better situation in my personal life and my professional life. Everything is working out really, really well. So the Japan experience was second to none.
And the good news is all the hate was mainly directed towards Matt Stryker.
Now, I would imagine that there was quite a bit of hate in October towards me and less hate in January. Is that fair?
I would say that's definitely fair from what I saw. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's still some here or there, but most of it seemed to be aimed at Yoshitatsu or Stryker, not you.
Well, Yoshitatsu was in a tough spot.
Yeah.
He was there to translate.
Right.
There wasn't a lot for him to translate. And his English is such that asking him to be an announcer, having a conversation with him, he's a pleasant guy. But having him to be an English-speaking announcer, yeesh, that's a tall order. So, but you live and learn. And I knew after the October, after the King of Pro Wrestling show, I needed to step up. I didn't know what I needed to know until I knew I didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, okay, and I listened to a lot of feedback. The New Japan Purecast, I've become an avid listener of them now. Because again, they knew the product better than me, which is understandable, but I knew I kind of understood after listening to them and listening to feedback that I got from other people where I fell short in October. And I was like, okay, I get another opportunity to do this here on January 4th. I can't wait. And just felt like I was prepared the right way and delivered the broadcast with confidence that I felt equaled the level of the matches. Because one of the things I definitely didn't want to do is be a step below, because I was a step below at King of Pro Wrestling. I definitely didn't want to be a step below at Wrestle Kingdom. Because that's the big show. That's the one that everybody listens to and remembers. And when they make video packages of, you know, my call was going to be on that. And I knew it needed to be as good as everything was. 40,000 people in the dome and everything that was on the line. So, you know, I knew I needed to improve. I felt I did. I still have some areas to improve upon, of course. But again, if we're continuing on that same trajectory, I feel very confident about the future in 2016.
So, Kev, speaking of really nice guys, I want to touch on one last story here before we get to our guest, who's, I'm sure, anxiously waiting to join us. And that was a couple Sundays ago. I went to the DDP Yoga Seminar in Newport, Rhode Island. And I'm not going to go too in-depth. I'll point people, if you're interested in it, PlaySimation.com. I wrote a piece kind of reviewing the whole day. And I just want to say it's well worth the money. I was a user of the yoga before, but this was a whole different experience. And, I mean, Paige is about as nice as you imagine him to be based on the work he's done. Like, he walks in, just immediate command in the room, walks in the room, and you can just kind of feel the presence. And he walked around before it started and introduced himself to every single person and talked for like a minute or two to everyone. Like, it was really cool. You know, how'd you find out? You know, the people that had been there the year before, which I didn't even know that they did one the year before. You know, he talked to them. He made sure, like, you know, how you been for over the last year? Good to see you again. Like, he, you know, pretty much remembered most of the people that had been there before. And then the talk he gave was around, you know, a lot about Jake because the movie was coming out a couple of days after the seminar. And he talked about almost an hour about his story. And it was a story I knew. It was, you know, all the stuff about growing up. But it was still compelling the way he told it. He kind of weaved in and out of current day, you know, to his time, you know, and before he got into the business and his injuries and his, you know, trouble with dyslexia and his trouble growing up. And just a really powerful story. And then the workout was great. It was like an hour 40 total when you factor in the kind of going over the moves and the breathing and everything and then the workout itself. And, I mean, I was hurting. And it was a good hurting. I wasn't like – I didn't feel like sore, but I was like wiped out that night. Like we went to my parents for dinner and I was like on the couch like laid out. Like you just stretched you out and wore you down. And it was just an awesome time, well worth the money. And just to give you a little bit more of a, you know, about what he's like is after I wrote the story – I sent it to both him and the personal trainer that I had met there that was from the area. And he texted it to Paige, said, I'm going to make sure he sees this. And I had also DM'd it to him on Twitter, to Paige himself. And, like, I didn't expect a response. I just figured, whatever, maybe I was looking for, like, just, like, a retweet or something. And a week later, he wrote me back, like, this, and I put it on my Facebook page, just super nice message, just, you know, thank you so much. I read this out loud to my wife. I had tears coming down my face. You know, what a, you know, great, you know, great job. Thank you so much for taking the time to write this. Please watch the movie. Check that out too. And I responded and said, thank you. And then he wrote me back again and was like, oh, you know, of course he, you know, DP as he was promoting throughout the whole thank you message. But it just, again, to take that time, my whole point is to take that time to say thank you that he read it means a lot to me. And like, it makes me want to keep supporting him. So a super nice guy, and you know everything he's doing for these guys is tremendous. And I recommend again the yoga program. We've talked about it millions of times on here, but whether you're trying to lose a ton of weight or just tone up or just to stay in shape, it's well worth the investment. And as long as you commit, you'll see the results. So I just wanted to kind of put that over. And again, you can read my full review on PlaySimation.com. Just search DDP; it should come up first. And check it out if you're interested. And he said he'll be back next year, so I'll be there. And I took my mother-in-law with me because she loves him and the yoga, and she had a blast. So she hasn't stopped talking about it still. So,
well, I'm glad that, again, that listen, DDP is amazing. DDP yoga is incredible. Stevie Richards, you know, and Paige have both been guests on the show. Didn't get a chance to see Stevie and everybody in Atlanta this past weekend. That was another big regret of mine recently, and I'm very disappointed about the fact that I didn't get to go to the Duluth, Georgia show for Ring of Honor, but The weather was crazy. The flight got canceled. The drive just too dangerous, and I had to turn around and come back. It was just a mess. But not only did I not get to see the final match of AJ, or the final appearance of AJ, and the last match of the Bullet Club altogether, but anyway, that was unfortunate this Saturday. But anyway, we look forward to coming back. So, all right, well, I know our guest is probably anxiously awaiting. He's probably, you know, doing push-ups or something to keep himself occupied. But we'll talk with John Walters in just a few moments. We'll take a quick timeout. We'll be back with our guest. It's the 50th episode of The Kevin Kelly Show on our website home and wherever you downloaded from. The website home, placetobenation.com. It's The Kevin Kelly Show. John Walters is next. Stay with us.
Place for Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceForNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscullo and me on the Mothership, The Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered too with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClune Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Mississippi putting it down. I'm the hottest round. I told y'all mother, y'all can stop it now. Listen to me now. I'm less than 20 grams. And if you want me, come on, get me now.
Okay, we're back here on The Kevin Kelly Show, and as promised, our guest is on the line. I've known our guest for, my gosh, well over 15 years. I knew him when he was just getting started in his career in professional wrestling in the New England area. Since then, I've gotten to know this man quite well. We worked together at Lucha Libre USA, and his ties to this show and to Place to Be Nation run right through his college days with our producer, Justin Rosero. He's John Walters. He's our guest on The Kevin Kelly Show. John, how you doing, my friend? What's going on?
Hi, guys. Good evening. How are you?
I am well. Where are you living right now?
I am in California currently. I've been out here for the past year, a little over a year. I'm in the Palm Springs area, Palm Desert to be exact, about 20 minutes east of Palm Springs. If you don't know where Palm Springs is, it's in the desert. So I'm in 80-degree weather right now, and it's the middle of January, so it's nice.
So we hate you.
John, I'm an awful friend because I was literally like next door to Palm Springs in October, and I had no idea you were living there.
That's pretty miserable. Where were you?
I was in La Quinta, and then we went to the Palm Palm Springs area to go up that giant mountain for the little tour.
Yeah, no, I'm like 10 minutes from that town, so
son
nice work.
Oh, man, all right. Well, if we ever go back, I'll let you know.
Good job. Way to go, Ace.
Damn it.
Some friend.
Right? Awful. I figured you were in, like, I don't know, some like San Diego or something.
No, no. I came out here. I basically had sold my house in Florida about a year and a half ago. And, you know, I was doing winters in Florida, summers up in Massachusetts, and I decided to come out here. Actually, my friend John, who is a talk radio host for KABC, he does the afternoon show up in L.A., and he was filling in for Geraldo Rivera when I was interviewed on his radio show, and he was a big wrestling fan, so he interviewed me. We stayed in touch, and he bought his house in Palm Springs around the same time that I sold my house in Florida, so he asked me if, you know, I had asked him if he was looking for a roommate for a few months. He said, sure. So I came out only knowing him. You know, wrestling was done for me last November, so it was around the same time. And I said, I'm going to go to the West Coast and give it a try. And 3 months later, I bought a condo out here because that's what I do. I go to town and just buy places. So, you know, makes more sense.
That's what you do. You've been, you know, again, I know I told everybody earlier on that you've got this new fitness program, this workout thing that you're talking about, and we'll talk about that later on. But I think one of the most important lessons I think that you could teach young people in the professional wrestling industry or any walk of life, you know, I saw a stat today that said 68% of people ruin their credit before they're 30 years old. And yet here you were throughout your 20s and 30s. You made enough money. You saved your money. You worked smart. You bought property. You invested well. And now you're able to pretty much do what you want to do. You're able to walk away from wrestling when you were ready to walk away from it. I think there's incredible value in what you can teach, not just young people in wrestling, but young people anywhere with the way you were able to manage your money. So kudos to you. Where did you learn that from?
I think it was from my parents. You know, my parents are Greek immigrants, and they came here to this country with nothing. They didn't know the language. They didn't have an education. And you compare them to a lot of American-born people who had every opportunity in the world, who were in debt up their you-know-what. My parents barely made it, you know, I would say that combined their salary. I wouldn't even say combined salary. So my mom didn't work till we were old enough, you know, told my sister, who was the youngest, was old enough to stay at home. So my dad on one salary, you know, who worked in a grocery store and worked in, you know, in pizza shops, killed himself working 60, 70 hours a week, you know, falling asleep on the toilet or in the car in the driveway because he worked so much. And my mom just pinched pennies. We didn't have many luxuries, and she just made ends meet. And then you see, you know, today's generation who thinks they're entitled to iPhones, entitled to fancy cars without having the money for it. So, you know, my parents never fell into that trap. They were very frugal, and they saved more, you know, they saved everything they made, just, you know, pretty damn close to everything they made. And I guess I learned from them. I mean, I like to have fun. I like to spend money occasionally, but I live well within my means, and I don't spend what I don't have, and I don't like charging stuff. I don't like paying interest. And it's really quite simple concept. It's just a lot of people don't follow it. And I tell people all the time, consumerism is the biggest disease in this country. It kills people because, like I said, they want expensive stuff. They don't want to pay for it, and they don't want to work for it, but they think they're entitled to it. And it's the reason, like you were saying, you know, 68% of people, I read a different study, 68% don't have a savings account. So figure 3 out of 10 people have money in the bank. It's not good.
Well, you know, listen, so. you hit 3 out of 10, you're in the Hall of Fame. So maybe there's something to be said for that.
Right, exactly.
Hey, so, okay, so California life, I'm sure it's rough on you. You're out there in the land of fruits and nuts. Do they want to run you out of town? Or do they look at you like you have, you know, a horn growing out of your head? Are you an alien? What is wrong with you? Is that pretty much the vibe you get from the citizens?
There are a lot of very open-minded liberals out here. I'm using the word open-minded very sarcastically. Yeah, I came out here to experience something different, make money, stay out here for a couple of years, and then jet. Because you know, I've been out here a year. I haven't met one normal girl who's doesn't, you know, take herself seriously. They're all sensitive and very easily offended out here. But you know, I've also made a couple of good friends. So. Life is an experience. You go to a different state, you work, you meet people, you move on. The people that are good and true will stay there. The ones that are not, it's just life experiences. In the end, it doesn't really matter. So, like I said, I'm out here making money, personal training now, and doing really well, and I have no complaints. I bought a nice condo out here in a highly rentable area, so if I decide to make it a vacation rental or sell it, I've already made a pretty penny profit-wise because I got it for a really good deal. So yeah, I do live very, very free, and not knowing anybody helps that because there's no distractions.
And I know that, of course, Justin Rosero takes a lot of credit for you, for all your successes in life, mm-hmm. getting you through college, apparently helping you through.
Yep.
There was some situation though that happened in a theater class. What happened, Justin? Tell the story.
Yeah, so John, I mean, yes, I would 80%, John, you think was me getting you through that point? I would say so, about 80-85%.
It was all you. You were the talent. You were it.
Well, I was like your manager, you know, but yeah, I mean, John and I had a couple classes together and we bonded instantly because we both, you know, both obviously were big wrestling fans, and I think WrestleCrap is what brought us together, John, if I remember correctly, but
Right.
And so any chance we had to do any kind of project wrestling related, we jumped on it. And I was laughing earlier, Kevin, because you unknowingly set us up for a different story when you mentioned nicknames potentially for Samoa Joe when he came in, and one you said was Hawaiian Punch. And John and I did a project for a TV class where we actually had a ring set up at the gym because when John was doing the training with Killer Kowalski, they put on a show at the school as a benefit, and we took advantage of that to film a project. And this little scrawny guy, our buddy Andy, his nickname in the movie was Andy Hawaiian Punch. So it just made me laugh when you brought that up earlier. But I digress. So, yeah, we go to theater class. John and I had a very eccentric teacher that we still talk about to this day. And we paired up to do a skit, and it had to be a dramatic skit. So, of course, we immediately think to wrestling. And we decided to kind of, you know, mimic, because we knew he had never seen Beyond the Mat. So we decided to just kind of redo. Actually, Beyond the Mat, or maybe it was like Wrestling with Shadows. It was a combination of the two. And the whole hook was that I was an evil promoter, and I had just screwed Bret Hart, or I had screwed a legend. And John was coming in to take a stand, and he had to decide whether to stay with me or he was going to walk out of principle. And so, you know, the best quote of the whole thing was, we worked in this inside joke, and I think this was from Beyond the Mat or something, where, you know, John says he talked to Coco Beware to get the inside scoop on what happened. And I don't know, it was just something to make us laugh. So, you know, that aside, at the end of the scene, John gets mad. He shoves a promoter, and I go flying into this, took the hell of his bump into this bookshelf, and I collapse down, and the books and these metal pipes fall over me, and the big gasps from the crowd, and it was our big culminating moment. But it was quickly stolen, our thunder, by our theater teacher, who, you know, was critiquing away as he's wont to do, and he goes, John, you know, it's like, why would you even stick around? You know, you come in here and you're saying you know what's going on, but you're hanging around. He's like, I thought you talked to Coco. And it was just like the most absurd thing you would ever hear in this really flamboyant voice. I mean, just, I thought you talked to Coco became like our catchphrase for a while, and still is to this day, right? I think I nailed that, well, John, right?
Yeah, the most important part was that in the 15 years in wrestling, nobody bumped for me like Justin did into the bookcase. I mean, he annihilated the thing. But in the end, we got a really good grade because it was natural. I liked wrestling. He liked wrestling, and we were playing off of things that were realistic: a promoter screwing a wrestler, and we actually showed bits and pieces. I was early into my career at that point, but I had enough where we had a highlight that we actually showed. On the, it was almost like my audition tape when I brought it into the promoter and we were watching it all. And, I remember the theater teacher liked that too, maybe because I was in tights, but not sure what the deal was, but, it was fun. Yeah, definitely an experience. And I don't want to talk about how long ago it was because then I'll feel old and jump off my balcony.
You are old. I was going to say, I know you're anti-drug, but you might want to call the hair club. I mean, that's one you could maybe go with.
Wow.
Drug? Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
See, that's
I'm getting
not,
there.
That's not right at all. Hey, John, I know, okay, so you made the decision to stop wrestling, correct?
Yes.
You were like, I don't want to wrestle anymore. But if Vince McMahon called and said, hey, listen, we'll put you on this Jericho kind of deal. You can pick and choose. You can come in whenever you want. We'll pay you a decent coin. Would you do it? Or are you done?
No, absolutely not. And that's when I knew that I was finished because – I said to myself, you know, towards the end, and I knew it was, you know, I had said that 2015 would be my last year. I was getting to the point where I still enjoyed performing, but I knew that I didn't want to do it for a living anymore. At my age, I just said to myself that the reason I got into it in the first place was to make it a career, and I didn't do it for a hobby. If people want to do it for, you know, as a hobby on the weekends, that's fine. I'm never going to tell anybody how to live their life or what they want to get out of wrestling. But for me, it was always a goal to do it for a living. And when I got to a point where I didn't want to do it for a living anymore, I didn't see the point. So I wasn't going to, you know, I said it on my Facebook page. I wasn't going to risk a life-changing injury for non-life-changing money. It just didn't make any sense to me. So, I could still go. I'm in the best shape of my life. I mean, you know, in all the years I wrestled, nobody ever blew me up in the ring. I was always came in shape and always showed up and did my job, but it just wasn't something I was passionate about anymore. And then when I looked at the products on TV that I saw, I said I probably wouldn't want to be a part of this anyways, because I wasn't really a fan of what it became. So for me, it didn't make any sense to continue. It was a very easy decision, actually. And a year, you know, over a year later, I don't miss it whatsoever. And that's a clear indication that I probably made the right choice.
Yeah, and again, what being able to leave what you did, and you did so well, to leave with your health intact, to be in the great shape that you are, you know, again, it's part of that decision making, and maybe it goes back to your parents. I'm not quite sure, but either way, they raised you right, and you listened, and you learned, and you were true to your word and true to yourself. So hats off to you for making that decision. Now, okay, so the day you decided, you said, okay, that's it, I'm done. Was there any worry? Was there any doubt? Or were you just thinking, okay, this is the next page, you know, in the book of life? Talk me through that a little bit.
I knew, you know, I wrestled Matt Hardy twice, and, you know, what a great opponent to have your last matches with. And I didn't go into the two matches, you know, last November. I was up in Vermont and Maine for Big Time Wrestling out of New England. I didn't walk in and say, these are my last matches, but I had an idea it was. And then I decided a few months later, after I had moved out here, that I was finished. And I just said that's it. You know, it wasn't a difficult decision at all. I've always had a lot of faith in myself, and I've been a very independent person where I've never hung my head on one thing. I mean, you know, a lot of people go all in wrestling, which I admire, but for every, you know, Bryan Danielson or CM Punk, who, from what I know, didn't really have jobs besides wrestling, there's about 100 people who end up broken down and in their 40s with no money. So it's a gamble. And for certain people, it pays off. For others, it didn't. And for me, I just wasn't going to go that route anymore because, like I said, it wasn't passionate. It wasn't super appealing to me anymore. And it also just didn't make sense financially to put my body at risk, because our health is all we have in the end. And it just was a very, very easy decision. I don't regret anything. I'm not bitter. I just, you know, I don't watch it anymore. And it's weird because it almost feels like it never existed. I look back at certain memories and I enjoyed it and I loved it, but I don't watch it anymore. I don't talk to my friends about it, with the exception of this interview, because Justin begged me.
Desperate. We needed you, kid. It's a big spot. It's a 50th show.
Yeah, you needed ratings. I get it. But no, it's almost like it was just a chapter that I closed, and that's pretty much it. I don't have any regrets, and like you said earlier, I've been smart with my money. I don't live paycheck to paycheck, so I could have came out here for a year and not worked and would have been just fine. So when you can be selective on what you're, you know, what kind of jobs you're going to do, and you have the capital to kind of be selective, I think it makes you more valuable, and it makes you pick and choose your spots better. So that's pretty much what I did. I came out here with an open mind. I said, I'll give it 6 months to a year. And I bought a condo 3 months later. And who knows? I may stay here for another year and then may end up back on the East Coast, or I may go to Alaska. Who knows? You know, I'm kind of like the wind. So
Alaskan John Walters. I like the sound of that. It's got a whole reality show vibe to it. I could definitely see up there. I think that would be awesome.
Me too.
Hey, okay. So we work together at Lucha Libre USA. You did RJ Brewer, and it was a very controversial character that you portrayed, which could not be more topical than the way it is now, all surrounding like the political campaigns and the talk of immigration. Did you realize at the time what you were hitting upon would be such an issue for America and Americans, and was definitely going to be a thing as we got into the 2016 campaign? Did you have any insight into that?
No, when I first, you know, when I first started becoming RJ Brewer, it was the character didn't really have an exact definitive, you know, purpose. It was like, you're going to be the son of Jan Brewer, even though we never said that. You're going to be talking about SB 1070, and you're going to be against illegal immigration. You're going to want these mass wrestlers out of the country. That's pretty much it. But it took a life of its own because of the media opportunities I got. Like, when I was on the front page of the LA Times, then ABC Nightline contacted, then Fox, then CNN, then Harper's Magazine, and, you know, the Geraldo Rivera radio show, and that's the reason I ended up out here. So it's funny how one thing dominoes into everything else. If I wasn't doing this character, I probably wouldn't be out here right now, because that's how I met my friend John, who said, hey, come live with me for a little while. So, no, I don't think anybody really expected it to be that, you know, that big, but unfortunately, it just, you know, the company just, I don't know if they didn't have the resources or what, you know, the deal was. Nobody ever really got a straight answer as to why they closed down, but it definitely got me a good bit of publicity. Unfortunately, the publicity means nothing if you don't have a product to sell, so it just kind of fizzled away. But immigration is always going to be topical, and no solution to it is going to please everybody, kind of like every other issue. If you talk about guns, you talk about abortion or whatever, those are issues that are so polarizing that you can pass a law or you can make a decision or an amendment to the Constitution. Not every single person in the country is going to be excited about it or satisfied. So immigration is the same way. But we definitely need to fix the problem, and that's not a character talking. That's real life.
Yeah, and I know like, do you have – and we'll just kind of talk in broad brushstrokes here if we can. You have confidence that things can get fixed, or are you – you know, are we seeing the best days of this republic having passed it by?
Yeah, I'm not faithful at all. And I'm a pretty open-minded, optimistic person, but I think the electorate has been shifted so much, and we have so many people having kids that shouldn't be having kids, and we're seeing the byproduct now of bad parenting and mental illness and crooked politicians who take advantage of that. And I think it's irreversible at this point. I really do. I hope I'm wrong, but it's probably affected my decision whether or not I want to have a kid. You know what I mean?
And, yeah. Well, I know Justin would probably take you back in. He would probably open up his house and let you live there, right, Justin? I mean,
absolutely.
That would work out.
And if I learned nothing from John, it's that I charge him rent to help offset my mortgage.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, and you would take every penny with a smile on your face. So,
oh, yeah.
That's right, brother. Rent's due.
But I don't know. I don't know. I think a lot of times, you know, flack is put on the president, and there's so many other entities besides the president that, you know, that are responsible for all this. And in the end, if you're not balancing your own checkbook and you're relying on the president to pass laws that are going to benefit you, then you're living way beyond your means and you need to fix stuff. So, you know, even though I haven't been a fan of the past two presidents at all, it hasn't really affected my bottom line all that much. Maybe certain things here and there, interest rates or whatnot, but in the end, I'm in charge of balancing my checkbook. And it's easy for me. I'm just a single guy with a dog, so it's not the most difficult thing for me to spend less than I make, but you know, a lot of people aren't balancing, and then they want to blame somebody else for that, and they want to blame Obama, they want to blame Bush. You know, I'm going to be outspoken about that stuff, but in the end, it's really not affecting me all that much, because I'm resourceful enough to know to not overextend myself. So
yeah, I've had the past 4 years have been the best 4 years I've had financially in a long, long time.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, I could bitch and moan about the way things are, and you know, in the big picture sense, or I could just take care of my address here and my dwelling and my neighbors. Like, we had 3 feet of snow. I was telling Justin before, we had 3 feet of snow on Saturday, and one neighbor is helping me with the skid loader plow out, you know, my driveway while I'm over shoveling his front porch and his back porch while my son is over shoveling out my older neighbor's car next door. I mean, that's all I care about. That's all we're doing.
Yes.
We're just taking care of ourselves and doing right by each other.
And I think people need to be good to each other, because in the end, you can't regulate hate, or you can't pass laws of, you know, to change morality. In the end, people just need to be good to each other. They need to take care of their families. And, and I'm a big fan of, you know, defending yourself, whether it be, taking a self-defense class, being harmed, but you know, whatever, you need to, you're responsible for your life and you're responsible for your family. And, I believe in karma, just being good to people and, you know, respecting everybody and their decisions, their views, whether it be politics or whatever, because there's so much divide and hate, and it doesn't get people anywhere. So disagreeing on certain issues is fine. That's the great thing about being an American, is we can voice our opinions. But a lot of times I find the people who preach tolerance are the most intolerant of them all. And like you were saying, help your neighbors, help people out, and, you know, talk about issues. And I think that that helps the world go around more than bitching and moaning. But, you know, I think I could share that too.
So you've always been, you know, one of the things, of course, one of the reasons why you had a long and prosperous career, the reason why you were able to go at the high level that you did, whether it was through promotions up in New England or Ring of Honor or Lucha Libre USA or Big Time Wrestling or any of the companies you work for, WWE, every opportunity you ever had. Man, one thing they always said, John Walters is in great shape. He's in fantastic shape and was always like the poster child for doing it the right way and was never the steroid guy. We knew that. That's why we hired you. That's why we could give you the ball, because it was like I knew that not only was he going to last, but he wouldn't get in trouble. None of these things would happen because we just knew that you were a clean athlete. That's the way you did things. So now I understand that you're working on a project where you're kind of putting this message out there, perhaps in a bigger setting, in a bigger way. Tell me about that and how this philosophy that you had, how this is all coming together now.
Well, you know, I started wrestling when I was 20, and you know, I was undersized. I graduated high school. I think I weighed 137 pounds, and I was probably wearing 3 t-shirts. So I was, you know, I was very, very lean naturally. I was just a small kid. And I wanted to become a pro wrestler, but I didn't want to take steroids. And I said, well, I need to put on muscle mass. I'm not going to walk into a Kowalski's wrestling school weighing 140 pounds. So I Googled, you know, I went online. I did a Google search for gaining muscle without steroids and without supplements, because, you know, I had tried different supplements, protein powders, creatine, whatever. To me, all it was just junk that was costing me $50 a month, and it wasn't doing anything but maybe retaining a little water. And this stuff's not regulated, so you don't really know what you're putting in your body. So I came across a workout program called Muscle Now. It was, you know, the website's musclenow.com. And if anybody's listening, you know, who's having a hard time gaining muscle or even losing fat, there's you know, different parts of the program. I urge you to go on there. Read the testimonials. 27,000 people have changed their bodies with this thing. And I was skeptical at first. Like anytime someone says, oh, this guy gained 35 pounds of muscle in 2 months, I said, well, that's, you know, that's not possible. But I ordered the program for, you know, whatever it cost at the time. And boom, I instantly started gaining muscle to the point where people were accusing me of taking steroids. And I was shocked at how just dieting correctly, using the you know, certain workouts, and just doing stuff the right way, and it was so much common sense in this program, just instantly started putting muscle on me, and it helped me, because, you know, early in my career, like you said, I was always in shape, and I looked the part. You know, a lot of guys go out and wrestle, and it's like, they don't look like they can kick your, you know, guy can kick your ass. Fans might not believe as much. So for me, it was awesome. You know, here I was, this 20-year-old, 21-year-old guy, doing shows, and I looked, you know, I looked good, and I knew that it was natural, so I never got any injuries. You see a lot of guys who are taking steroids, they'll put all this muscle on these you know, joints and bones, throwing 30 pounds on in a month, and all of a sudden it's like their joints and bones have all this extra muscle mass that they haven't gradually gotten used to, and that's why so many people have broken bones and, you know, torn rotator cuffs, and a lot of it is from really heavy lifting that their body hasn't naturally progressed to. So I think the fact that I gained muscle pretty fast, but it was natural, helped me stay injury-free. So I became friends with the author because he offered lifetime, and he still does. He offers lifetime support on email. If you buy his program, you can email him questions as much as you want, and he returns the emails within a couple of days. There's no charge extra for it. And we became friends. He was a wrestling fan. He came to a couple of my shows, and we got together this past June, and we decided to put a video format for the program. So we're in the editing stages now, and it's basically going to take 3 sample workouts, put it in a video form, and he'll have it for sale on his website, musclenow.com. And we're looking forward to it because the book is great. There's pictures, but in the end, if people can visually see the workouts on their you know, on their DVD player or whatever, online, however he's going to – I'm not sure how we're going to have it yet, but I think that's very what's the word I'm looking for? It's a lot more, you know, as wrestling's a visual sport, anything when you're looking at it visually as opposed to reading it is going to be more effective. So it was kind of my idea. I approached him. I said, let's make a video, and he was all for it. So he came out here in June, and we filmed some stuff.
Well, I look forward to seeing that. So the website, Muscle Now, www.thecavenkellyshow.com. And yep. There's information there that people could go to. And, of course, they'll be able to see more of this video and eventually I'm sure be able to order it. You know, we've brought a lot of different sort of backgrounds post-wrestling to the show here. And whether it was, you know, Stevie Richards talking about DDP Yoga or, you know, Paige himself was a guest here. We also had Dan Spivey on talking about what he's doing with helping wrestlers, you know, post recovery as, you know, as a mentor in sort of a halfway house setting. And now this with you, it's just been great that we've been able to bring these stories to light, that there is more to wrestlers than just wrestling, and certainly more to wrestlers than just wrestling after they retire. And, as they're able to make the transition to whatever is next,
life. You know, it's very sad to see guys don't think they have any self-worth when the pop is over. And that's very sad. And, to think that, you know, wrestling is done, what do I have to live for? And, well, we got a lot to live for. You know, it's not the be-all, end-all. And like I said, I respect people who go all into it, who want it bad, who won't give up. But, you know, there comes a certain point where you have to walk away for your health. And a lot of guys can't grasp that. And it's sad to see some of these legends doing independent shows, not because they want to, but because they have to, after they've blown all their money and, you know, their bodies are beaten down, and that's somewhere I didn't want to be. So for me, you know, where I'm at now is I'm in a good place. I wake up every day thankful for what I got, and wouldn't change anything for the world. So
yeah, you want to move back to the Northeast. You miss all the snow and the cold.
I'll be back eventually. That's where my family is. I'm actually going to be looking at some land this summer to potentially build something in a couple of years. Not, you know, if I pick up the land this summer, I'll wait for a few years to figure out what I'm doing. But, you know, that's where my family is and my background. So I'll eventually be back there, whether it's on a full-time or part-time basis. But, you know, for now, I'm just trying to get money and sock it away for the revolution. So
you are socking away from the I'm proud of you, and I'm very happy that you could be, because we were trying to, like, Justin and I were trying to get like the right guest for the 50th, you know, and and it was like name, and then he said you, and I was like, yeah, that's it, that's perfect, because you and I were together on Justin and Scott's show, and yep. That became and the reason why that he and I worked together on this show is because of you. So you were the perfect guest to have on here at this time. So we can blame you for this.
Well, Justin's a weasel. He takes, you know, he's an opportunist. So when he knew I knew you, he said, "Oh, okay, Kevin Kelly." I said, "Okay, you know, that's a, you know, networking."
Listen, but, you're on here peddling. You know, you're on here peddling VHS tapes. Like anyone's going to get me into that shit.
Well, right? I still don't have cable, and I still have a VHS player and flip phone. So you know me. if anybody's listening and interested, if they go to musclenow.com and then they're skeptical, they have any questions, they can email me, or they can, you know, go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/RJBrutal1070. They can message me on there, and I'll answer any questions for them. And I also have a coupon code where they'll get a discount if they decide to order. So, you get a 90-day money-back guarantee. You don't like it, send it back. He'll send you back your money. So, you know, if someone's struggling with a fitness plan and they want to give it a shot, there's no risk. And the author is one of the most honest, genuine human beings I've ever met. And, you know, if I'm going to tie my name to something, it's going to be something I believe in. And, that's all I got.
That's it. All right. So so now, let's see, it's 5:50, almost 6 o'clock your time. What are you doing for the rest of the night? What's the plan?
Eat ice cream.
I cooked some food earlier, some brown rice, some pasta, and some Italian spicy turkey sausage. I got a second plate waiting for me. I'm going to walk the dog. I'm probably going to rent a movie, and I got to be up at 6 a.m. for to train a couple clients in the morning. So it's a tough life, but, you know, sometimes working 3 hours a day is it's part of the grind. You know what I mean?
You bastard, 3 hours a day. Damn it. Well, listen, damn it, Alan.
I'll be back up in Mass this summer for a few months for sure. And if you're local at a show, I'll come hook up with you guys.
Yeah, you're a Ring of Honor legend. You know that too. So you were part of the fabric of the company going way back when. So, you know, we'd love to have you on.
Yeah, maybe I'll come do one match. I'll be all fat and broken down.
That's That's the only thing we could hope for.
That's the only way I would do it.
You can team with Kevin. Yeah.
All right. Hey, that's enough. We're out of time. Okay? So please.
All right, guys.
All right. John Walters, everybody. There he is. Thank you very much. MuscleNow.com. Go check it out. And, stalk him on Facebook. It's a fun thing to do. All right. John, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Take care. Thank you.
Take an ice cream, boss.
You. Be good.
All right, that's John Walters, everybody. We're going to take a quick time out. We'll put a bow on this 50th edition of the Kevin Kelly Show. Stick with us. More to come. So step off the Frankfurter. Yo, Fife, you remember that routine that we used to make spiffy like Mr. Clean? A tidbit, a smidgen. I don't get the message, so you got to run the pigeon. You're on point, Fife. All the time, Tip. You're on... This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO... PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Team's Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. All right, so John Walters had a lot to say, and MuscleNow.com is the website. I want you to go check that out, and let's see if what he says is true. Hold him to his claims, because, again, a lot of people say a lot of things, but we'll see if indeed, you know, Justin, you know from doing DDP yoga, it's the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so is MuscleNow.com the real deal? Go check out the website, find out for yourself, and make it happen. All right, so we've talked enough wrestling. I'm done with wrestling talk. I can't take it anymore. I want to talk about something important, and that's football, because we are at the crux, the culmination, the game, the golden game. Can we say the SB word, or will we get sued?
Yep, Super Bowl.
All right, good. 50th Super Bowl in a couple of weeks. We record this the day after Denver and Carolina won their respective conference championships and are heading to the Super Bowl. First, we were chatting online when the demise of Tom Brady brought a smile to our collective faces, but it was rather underwhelming, I think. If you've never seen a football game before and you're just watching the Denver New England game, Denver didn't exactly look like a juggernaut that's ready to win the Super Bowl, did they?
The defense did. And they said going into the game, and because obviously, you know, being in, this area, that was a lot of hype around here for that game. And going into it, the word was that they were trying to Trent Dilfer Peyton Manning. You know, if he could be smart and throw a couple touchdowns when you need it, don't throw any picks, don't do anything stupid, and just manage the game with their run game and their defense, they felt like they were comfortable, you know, being able to hold the Pats down. And the magic number was about 20. So they figured if they get to 20, maybe we can hold the Pats under 20 and pull it out. And they did. And I think if their defense can stay at that level, they may have a shot. But this also has a very good chance of being a redux of 2 years ago when Seattle just blew the doors off of Denver. And I don't really care. My dog was put to sleep yesterday, so I was excited that I don't have to worry about another year of the Patriots being in the Super Bowl, the anxiety of having to hear everyone talk about it for another 2 weeks and celebrate it around here. And I think that's why you and I were messaging yesterday, Kev, because I don't have too many. I have a few Patriot hater friends, and I was just, you know, trying not to get too excited because, as we saw at the end, they're never dead until they're dead. And, you know, despite getting his ass kicked for most of the game, Brady still leads him on the drive at the end. Gronkowski makes two big plays. And here we are looking at a two-point conversion that thankfully came up short, because I think if that gets to overtime, the Pats probably run the Super Bowl. So luckily Denver stopped that play, but Brady's O-line did him no favors, and Brady didn't help himself either with that pick that gave Denver the opportunity to go up, you know, 14-6 after the Pats had come back to get the game close. So, you know, I was happy. Pats have had enough success. And I was happy, too, for Peyton Manning, because I felt like he got a lot of dirt thrown on his grave over the last couple of weeks, a lot of disrespect from Patriots media and fans. Like, I saw more than one. I'm obviously friends with a lot of Pats fans on Facebook and elsewhere, and they were happy. They didn't want to see Pittsburgh. They wanted to play Denver. They thought Manning was washed up and done. And, you know, I think they kind of discounted what a horror shop that stadium's been for them. And a lot of that piles back on Belichick's decisions from throughout the season, like when he got cute in the Eagles game and he did the drop kick and the funny formations and they end up blowing that game. There's one. The funky decisions in the Jets game, not going for it at the end of regulation, then the coin toss fiasco, kind of playing a little conservative in that game. And then Miami, where they were protecting everyone, just running, trying not to get anyone hurt. And then they blew that game, and that made them have to go to Denver. And I think if that game's in Foxborough, they probably win, because I think the Denver crowd played a major role in all that.
I did like how Denver did just enough offensively to win. There were no – I don't know what Demaryius Thomas's deal is, but he better get right or they're going to have no shot. I mean, if the line – you know, I saw that Carolina's just a slight favorite, considering that they won in, by, geez, what, 30 points practically – And Denver didn't exactly dominate, but Demaryius Thomas has got to get back to life, or Denver could get blown out. They just don't have enough weapons. They certainly Carolina's defense is good enough for them to run. Was, you know, the whole Carson Palmer negativity today kind of threw me off, because yeah, he had a stinker of a game. But correct me if I'm wrong, it was a 10-point game when Patrick Peterson fumbled that punt.
Right.
And, you know, 17-7 now becomes 24-7. Mm-hmm. And instantaneously, because they went right after him, targeted him for two passes, and they're already in the end zone. To me, that was a game that was a touchdown game, maybe even a 3-point game as you go to half. And now, instead, you're looking at a 17-point deficit, and it changes the whole game plan. You've got to throw. You've got to be aggressive, and you're going to make mistakes. That's the way it goes.
Right. I agree. I mean, I think they didn't pile up as quickly as they did, but like you're saying, at that point, it's desperation. You're just chucking stuff up, and you know, whatever happens, happens. But, you know, it's tough to see him get to that point, because he's battled so much over the last couple of years. Think of how good they were last year, and then he gets hurt, and then how good they are this year. He stays healthy finally, gets to the playoffs, and then kind of tosses up a couple of stinkers, and you feel bad for him, but he's maybe got that Bengal stank on him that he's not going to be able to get off.
You know who's thrown up a couple of stinkers is Vince Young. Did you see that? Boy, if there was ever a time to do headlines, I saw Vince Young got popped for DUI. Have you seen how fat he was?
No.
Oh, you got to find the mugshot. It looks like he was playing a catch with Matt Leinart and then ate him. It's sad, just sad. But the idea that now Peyton Manning goes into the – is this his last game, in your opinion, win or lose?
I think it's his last game for Denver, because I don't think they're going to want to pay him. And they have to make a decision. If they like Osweiler, he's a free agent too. So, I mean, does Osweiler give him the finger and say, screw you guys, you know, you pulled me out? Or does he understand that, all right, it's Peyton Manning, you know, whatever, and then stay if they give him the job? I mean, they got to make a decision. I think he's done there. If he wins, if I'm him, you got to walk away. I mean, with everything going on, he's got to realize his limitations. If he loses, I don't know. I mean, there's going to be teams that will probably throw some money at him, like Houston. I mean, they're desperate for a quarterback. Could he go in there for a year? You got DeAndre Hopkins. One I heard today that was interesting, what about the Rams? Maybe trying to make a splash for a year in L.A.? They don't really have much going on at QB. Do they pay him to come be the face of the franchise as they kind of kick off this new phase? So, I mean, I think it's two teams at least right there. I don't know, the 49ers maybe. You know, there are teams out there that would maybe take a look at him that could use his services. But it depends on how beat up he is, I guess. If he wins, I mean, I can't imagine he'd want to come back if he wins.
Right. I like the idea, too, of Peyton getting into this game in relative health. I mean, because we saw him when he took off and ran in either the third quarter. Yeah, it was the third quarter. And it was a different Peyton Manning than we had seen you know, 2 months ago, where he was hobbled by the foot injury, and now looked like he could move just a little bit, and he wasn't doing a lot of staying alive in the pocket yesterday because the pass rush was so good. They really had him bottled in. But I'm glad to see that at least he's going in relatively healthy. Yes, he's got a bad neck, and he doesn't have the arm strength he once had. So there won't be any excuses in that regard. I just don't know if there's any stopping Cam Newton because he and the Panthers just look unbeatable.
Yeah, they look really good. And I feel like I retweeted someone today that said, you know, they could win by 30 and there'll still be some people out there. Oh, I don't know. Maybe, you know, like at what point do we respect them for what they've done this year? Because I feel like there's been an asterisk next to their name for whatever reason all year long as the, you know, let's see it. And they've done nothing but win. And, you know, they were really close to having an undefeated season, which would have been crazy, especially when you figure they lost their best receiver in training camp. I mean, you know, Ted Ginn is their one. Jericho Cotchery is their two. You know, Greg Olsen. It's crazy what they got going on down there. But Cam is playing out of his mind. He's going to win if he hasn't already. I don't think they've announced it, right? But, I mean, he's going to be the MVP. Rivera probably may be coach of the year. So, and Rivera is another guy that's really turned things around, changed his ways, changed his system, and made himself into a top head coach. Remember a few years ago, he was getting a lot of shit because he was super conservative. He wasn't using Newton like in those short yardage situations. And then the switch flipped. It became Riverboat Ron. He started running on fourth down all the time and taking shots. And the whole franchise really turned around, and they've been to the playoffs now a few years in a row and are on the verge of winning a Super Bowl. I'm torn because I like Cam Newton a lot, and I kind of want to see them just put it away. But I've also always liked Peyton Manning, and I feel like he, you know, because of his one-and-dones and everything else in the playoffs, he doesn't always get that level of respect as a big-time player. So I feel like if he were to win this one and at least throw a couple touchdowns, like I was glad he threw some touchdowns yesterday, and it wasn't like purely on the run game and the D. I feel like this helps his legacy a lot. He's now 3-1 against Brady in championship games. And he'll have won two Super Bowls. It's not Brady's four, but, you know, it's puts him into the conversation instead of being, you know, if he loses this one, it'll be, what, 1-3 in Super Bowls. You know, 2-2 looks a lot better. So from a legacy perspective, it'd be really cool if Denver wins. But, you know, I like Cam Newton a lot. I hate the critics of Cam Newton for his attitude, you know, brashness and attitude. I think that's infectious. I think it's what makes them winners. Is the way he plays the game and his attitude about it. So part of me wants to see him win and dance and, you know, flip everyone off on the way to the title and whatever, shove it at everyone's face. So it's kind of a can't lose for me on this game when it was looking like it was going to be a must lose for a while.
Yeah. And the idea that, and here's a little sidebar story, which has no bearing on the outcome of the game at all, but something very interesting in my house and having nothing to do with the quarterbacks, the my two sons are named Peyton and Cam.
Oh, look at that.
So we have a little bit of, you know, which son will win and who will come out on top. So Peyton versus Cameron in the Super Bowl. I told Cam that, hey, buddy, you're the favorite. You probably will win. But be nice to your older brother, because this might be the last Super Bowl that he gets to. And so my Cam is 8, you know, and he's like, but I want my brother to win. That's okay, right? And I said, yes, of course. It's not a real game. Never mind, you know. So we don't want anybody getting upset about this. But, you know, there will be hot wings had. There will be Bonehead's wings had. There will be all kinds of different flavors, I'm sure.
Did you know by the way, did you know this is the first time ever that two quarterbacks drafted number one is squaring off in the Super Bowl?
I did not know that.
Pretty cool, huh?
See, and that's what they always say. You need the franchise quarterback to win a Super Bowl. But the odds of them both making it have, you know, to the same game. Because, again, you look at Tom Brady, you look at Russell Wilson.
They're franchise quarterbacks. They just weren't drafted number one.
No, that's what I mean. But, I mean, you got to find that guy, but you're not expecting to find Brady in the sixth round or Russell Wilson as late as they drafted him. Again, could have been Ryan Leaf. Oh, what could have been? Thoughts quickly on the Los Angeles Rams, the San Diego Chargers, perhaps moving to LA. What do you think about this whole situation?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it was kind of funny how angry some of the St. Louis fans were when they stole the franchise from LA to begin with. So that part befuddled me on some levels. But I get that a lot of fans weren't alive when that happened, and those are the majority that are pissed. And I know Krinky's kind of a scumbag. The way he's doing everything was not accurate of the way you should do these kind of things. But, you know, I always thought LA should have a team. I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, should it have been an expansion team? Maybe, instead of ripping one out of a current city. I mean, I think San Diego's probably going to go. It seems that way. And now the rumor is that Oakland may move to San Diego, the Raiders, if San Diego goes to LA. So a lot of moving parts in Southern California. But, I mean, it was going to happen at some point. There was no doubt about it. And, you know, the Rams are playing half their games in London anyway, which is pretty funny because they signed that contract, right? I think to play like 3 or 4 years in a row in London. And now they're moving to this brand new, well, eventually brand new LA stadium, this brand new LA team. And they're going to be playing home games in London for the next year or so. But so that was funny. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, ambivalent. But if it was my team, I may feel differently.
I don't. And again, you're a fan of the Jets. I'm a fan of the Giants. I could care less that the two teams share a stadium.
Right, and I could care less if they moved, I guess, theoretically, because I don't live in the state. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really have any hometown team. I mean, I guess if the Friars moved colleges, I don't know. Like, I don't have – just being from Rhode Island, that kind of stuff's never really bothered me because it's kind of like whatever. I don't root for many of the local teams. So if the Jets played in Oklahoma, like whatever. You know, it wouldn't really affect me that much.
The Oklahoma Jets.
You know, the Anchorage Yankees, I guess, whatever.
It could happen. All right. Well, that's
Friars,
the,
by the way. Friars. Top 10 again today.
Your PC Friars are on fire.
Yeah. Top 10.
What rank? Where are they now? Because they haven't lost in a month and a half. So where are they ranked?
No, they lost. They've lost. They lost they lost two bad games. Well, one bad game, one kind of shaky game.
How many in a row have they won?
Now they've won two in a row. They beat Butler. They had a big week. They beat Butler, who was ranked 20th, I think, or 18th when they played them. And now they beat Villanova at Villanova yesterday. Villanova is fourth in the nation. So today the rankings came out, and PC's back up to 10th in both polls.
Well, there you go.
So big game tomorrow night. I'll be there against Xavier. Xavier's ranked, I think, 6th, maybe 5th or 6th.
Now, if we had John Walters against Xavier, that would be something.
Yes, it would. Well, I'm sure that happened at some point. You can go find him at the strip club he's working at now.
That's not right.
That's
John
true.
Doesn't work at the strip club. He just told you. He's making muscle down videos.
I'm talking about Xavier.
Oh. All right. Well, listen. We've done 50 episodes. Should we keep going?
Yeah. All right.
All right. We'll do more. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks. We'll update everybody on, you know, we'll have guests when they're right. I think is a fair assumption, right?
Yeah, sure.
We have enough to talk about. We have plenty of fodder. There's a lot, you know, again, it's a crazy time in the wrestling business right now. And I think as those stories unfold, we'll be there to tell them because, you know, Nakamura is the next domino to fall. And we'll see what happens with them. We'll see what happens with Gallows and Carl Anderson and where they wind up and when. As AJ Styles and Chris Jericho are wrestling on Raw right now as I sit here. So. Again, crazy, crazy time. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, and we will do that here on The Kevin Kelly Show. I want to thank everybody who's made the first 50 episodes so great. Justin, thank you for everything. I really do appreciate it.
You got it, boss.
All right, man.
Thank you.
So that does it for the 50th edition of The Kevin Kelly Show. Make sure you join us in a couple of weeks' time, and we will see you when we see you on The Kevin Kelly Show. Our website home is placetobenation.com.
Wake up to get ready to rig the thing I wore for the ass motorboating.
A tree fell on Greg Abbott.
You know, I'm only 50 now and the phone could ring at any time.
Basically, because she had Tommy John and had the strong arm, she gave these awesome hand jobs that he was like obsessed with.
This honey is from Hazel's Honey Hut.
But by the way, speaking of food and Bush,
I think Chris Jericho is who Michael Hayes would like to be.
Always had a lot of issues with Cox, or have you dealt with Cox better in the past?
I used to enjoy dealing with Cox.
Then people would be more inclined to buy the network. And watch the shows.
I'd buy the network for a happy ending.
I do not know where Steve Austin is. He saw the gun. He saw the gun and he left. Oh my God, he's back.
All right, here we go. So I got to piss. Be right back.
Will you do my wife and I the honor of purchasing you?
Oh, wait a minute.
I don't get butt hurt.
Bye.